There's that pause. And
it's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Vibach Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelt.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at hummingbirdridgewinery.com.
My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that, you know, just a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Waltz, Vineyard, with an S, don't forget the F.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive, P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, best people.
Thank you. Wow, big crowd today. It's July 11th. Yeah, July 11th, 7:04 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Our guest. If you're talking, I can't hear you. I don't know what happened. If it's you or me, but Mike, you just faded away there. I don't know what happened. Mike was right in the middle of saying something, and he disappeared. Mike was dropped. There, I just saw that. But again, it's 7:05 Eastern Time, If you'd like to get a hold of us, if you'd like to talk to us, if you have any questions, you have anything to talk about tonight, you can always call in. We'll bring you into
there
the...
There you go.
You just disappeared.
I heard a little water droplet, and I was disconnected. So there we go. Anyway, continue. You're doing great.
I was just saying, if you'd like to call in, if you'd like to talk to us, and any questions, anything about wine, we're trying to stay on the subject of wine, although we did talk about hydraulic fracturing, but that does affect grapes and vineyards. So call in line 646-727-3235. It's New York, or you can text us at what is it? All About Wine BTR? I don't know how to text. I don't do texting back and forth like that, so I don't know how that would work.
I don't have that wine open. I mean, on Skype? Yeah, I could probably look up a Skype thing.
I don't know.
Give us a call.
Give us a call, yeah. Or you can email us or any number of ways to get in touch with us. But, you know, if you got any subject or anything, let us know. We'll be happy to talk with you about it.
Absolutely.
So tonight, I think we're done with Tennessee. We have been on Tennessee for a month or so. We've talked to people from Tennessee and around and all that. Well, actually, a couple months it's been now. And I sent out the last batch of contacts and tried to get them on and all that, and scheduling conflicts and different things. We have not been able to get anyone else on from Tennessee, so looks like we're going to be moving to Texas. We're ready to go to the Lone Star State next week, or, well, actually in a couple of weeks. I'm going to try to get a guest on next week that I've talked to. So, and speaking of guests on that we haven't had, too, I was listening to that opening. And Jason, the wine attorney from Pennsylvania, when we talked to him, I remember we said, okay, if we call you and get you on again and get updates, and he said, sure, you know, not a problem. So I'll see if I can't get a hold of Jason, see if he's free to join us on our program and tell us what's going on. And because he was rather knowledgeable, not just about Pennsylvania laws and stuff, but about what was going on in the country. So I'll try to get a hold of Jason and see if we can't get him on. And so we got some possibilities. But Texas is our next state. And probably in a week or two we'll start Texas. But one of the subjects I'm going to do tonight is talking a little bit about Texas, or actually Texas grapes. But tonight's subjects are going to a few miscellaneous. I got a couple of three properties to read you here in our property segment. We need an intro to our property segment. You know, that little thing that I don't know what it would be, but a little...
Yeah, maybe a real estate type thing?
Yeah, we need some sort of, so we can hit it in real estate, you know. I mean, is maybe.
Oh.
No, that won't work.
No.
So, who knows? Maybe people are looking at that. And speaking of real estate, I tried to get a hold of a real estate agent out in California. He's listed stuff on what I read here. And I invited him to join us on the show as a monthly guest, coming on once a month just for, you know, 5 minutes or so, just to tell us any new properties or what's going on in the winery real estate or vineyard real estate or anything out in California. And, you know, let him promo himself and all that. Never heard back from him, which, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's strange, but...
Yep.
Oh well, I'll see if I can't get a hold of another real estate agent. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I will find somebody who will do it. I think that'd be fun to do that. You know, have somebody on, tell us what's going on.
We're kind of in a lull, I think, because, you know, it's almost like a seasonal type thing. We get a hit where we get like you can't get in touch with the northern or Rocky Mountain states during the winter time. And but we're covering the states, and then we come into summertime when they're open, and we've moved on. So what we need to let them understand is, you know, if they're out there listening right now, is that it's always open to the ones that we have already passed by. So if we've already talked about Colorado or some of those states that were not open, you know, we can still cover that now. So it's not a you know, oh, we're done with, you know, like Tennessee. Nobody coming on for Tennessee, but who's to say a couple of months from now, you know, they finally perk up and go, oh, man, I should have been on that program, and they can still come on. It's not a – just because we're done with the state or the area doesn't mean we're done completely. We can always go back to it. So keep that in mind.
I just said we've done that, too. We went back. We picked up a show from Missouri. I think we got one from what was it? I don't know. I can't recall. But we jumped back to other states. So, and also, listeners, y'all out there listening on archives or anything, if you have a favorite winery, when you're in visiting the winery, say, hey, have you been on All About Wine? And give them our link, just to All About Wine BTR. Tell them to get in touch with us. We'll be happy to talk with them. I mean, it just it's,
yeah, put the word out. You visit a winery and you know, let them know, and it's a great avenue for them to advertise their business and help the wine industry as well. So definitely do that.
So, you know, cool. If everybody helps out a little bit there, it all helps us in the end. So, hope everyone had a nice holiday last week. We didn't do a program because of the fireworks, and we were hiding under the bed. So, now we're back and ready to go. Real estate, whatever intro we can come up with here, and we'll try to do that. And if we get ourselves a guest every week, we can do that too, or every month. But just, you know, only four properties listed this time. First one, Eagle Point Ranch and Vineyard. And again, I remind you, if you are interested in any of these, email me. I will pass on the contact information to you. Eagle Point Ranch and Vineyards, approximately 1,200 glorious acres, located in the Maikama Mountains east of Ukiah, featuring 70 plus or minus acres of producing vineyard, a main farmhouse, a cottage, a cabin, expansive views, wonderful potential. Call for further details. That sounds exciting. No price listed or anything. Get in touch with me. I will pass on contact information. Another one, Quail Haven Home and Vineyard. 3-bedroom, 2-bath custom home on 10 acres, 7.5-acre vineyard and workshop building. Reduced to $549,000. So there's another one. Quail Haven, I think, is in the eastern part of California, eastern part of the state. Temecula Wine Country, developer's investor's dream. 365 acres currently in grapefruit, which is bringing in an income. Perfect for mixed-use development. So there you go. We got already got the potential of coming in, but you can put in grapevines and still make money off of the grapefruit. No price listed. Let me know if you want to hear about it. And winery tasting room potential. 35 plus or minus acres, 6-plus acre vineyard on a major country road among other wineries and tasting rooms. The vineyard contains Barbera, Pinot Grigio, and Syrah. $695,000. That's a good price, actually, for 35 acres. That's in the eastern part, again, eastern part of the state of California, northeastern, east of Sacramento area there. And those are our only four for this segment of the real estate. Now, see, now we need a closing, a little closing thing, too, you know, a little jingle or something.
And closing. Okay.
Real estate jingle, opening and closing. Hey, what the heck?
Did I say I only had 11 days off?
okay. And I wasn't done yet. I was
I know.
Yeah. Mike is going to be around next week. He has 11 days off, but he'll be around next week. Yeah. He's going to do day trips. That's all.
Yep.
Yeah. And
going
so
far away.
He'll far away. Local towns and stuff.
Yeah. 10 miles. Yeah. Woo. That's a 2-day trip.
That is. Yeah.
Okay.
Market continues to bear fruit. Here's a state of the beverage thing. I don't know if I read this. I don't believe I did. If I did, I apologize because I'm going to read it again. In 2012, the U.S. wine exports reached $1.4 billion, with 90% of that coming out of California. That's from the Wine Institute and Global Trade Information Services, which is a department of the U.S. Department of Congress. Last year marked the third consecutive year of increased exports, up 2.6% from 2011. This volume reaching nearly 47.2 million cases in exports. Top five wine brands in table wines in the United States. Barefoot, with a growth of 14.5%. $490 million in sales. Sutter Home, number two, which doesn't really surprise me. Barefoot and Sutter Home. Number three, Yellowtail. Number four, Franzia Box. Now, that does surprise me because Franzia Box, in my opinion, is not the best of the box wines out there. There are some others that are good, but like engineer just told me that they are the cheapest, so that's probably why they sell. $285 million in sales from Franzia Box last year. And then followed up by number five, Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. So names we've all seen and trust. Sparkling wines. These are, again, U.S. sales. Number one, Korbel, $81.2 million. Two, Cook's. That's U.S. Korbel and Cook's, both U.S. brands, at $65.5 million. André, U.S. brand also. Barefoot Bubbly. I don't believe I've ever seen that. Not that I've looked for it, but all these others I'm familiar with. But Barefoot Bubbly, $47.9 million in sales. And the last one, which is an Italian, Martini and Rossi. So, interesting list of bubblies there. U.S. wine exports from the United States going to other countries. Number one, European Union. Now, we've got to qualify that because that includes re-exported wine. So, Germany buys a lot of stuff from different wineries here as a blending in, different places. But the European Union, $485.3 million in sales in 2012 from the United States to them. Number two, Canada at $433.6 million. Number three, Hong Kong, which sort of surprised me for some reason. I don't know. At 114.6. So the top two, 485 and 433, and then third is 114 million. So big drop off. Japan is number four. Then China, Vietnam, Mexico. These are export from the United States to these countries. South Korea, Switzerland, Singapore, Taiwan, Philippines, Macau, Bahamas, Thailand, Colombia, Russia, Dominican Republic, United Arab Emirates, Australia. Australia is only down, way down the list at 4.3 million. Then other countries are all listed together. World total 1,431.8 million in exports last year. So just interesting little chart there. Wanted to share with you. And we're going to be moving into Texas pretty soon here. And I noticed something in blog. I follow a lot of blogs. I've mentioned this before. I follow a lot of blogs. And one of the blogs written by a lady in Texas, and I'll talk about it in a few minutes and talk about her, but she mentioned a tenet grape, and I believe it's pronounced tenet. I don't think it's tenet or anything. I think it's a tenet grape. And if I'm pronouncing it wrong, then, bad me again because I'm good at that. Tenet grape It's a red grape historically grown in the southwest France. It's from the Medrin AOC, and it's now the predominant grape in Uruguay, where it's considered the national grape in Uruguay. And honestly, I don't hear much about the tenant grape, and yet it's the national grape in Uruguay. Also grown in Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Peru, Bolivia, and in Italy. And it's used primarily as a blending grape. It's not really been used too much as a varietal. But in the United States, Maryland, Virginia, and Texas have plantings, as does California. And California is increasing their plantings by quite a bit every year. So the tannin wine produced in Uruguay is usually quite different in character from the ones from France, being lighter in body and lower in tannins. It's also used to make cognac and full-bodied rosés. In France, it has harsh tannins, which causes problems. Micro-oxygenation is applied to it. There's the method of micro-oxygenation, a process of micro-oxygenation is invented. It's used quite a bit on the tannic grape. It's used often as a blend with Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. And fir, that's a French grape, and it goes by like, you know, 20 different names. I won't go into that one because we're not talking about the fir. If aged in oak, it softens the tannins, and it makes for a much better grape. It's raspberry aromas, they're saying, dark colors, high levels of alcohol, and a lot of times it's... because of that, it has to be used as a blend. Uruguay originally got the tannin grape by Basque settlers coming over in the 19th century, and they brought them over and planted them, and they flourish today. It's blended with the Pinot Noir and Merlot and other varieties. It says that it's reminiscent of a port and the classic Beaujolais. Uruguay also has... new plantings, they're comparing the old plantings and new plantings. They're comparing them, old vines and new vines. They're saying the new vines is giving a more powerful wines, more higher alcohol, less acidity, and more complex fruit flavors. So they're advertising old plantings and new plantings because of that. The United States, University of California, Berkeley, agriculture professor Eugene Hilgard imported the tannin from France back in the late 19th century. It has started to catch on South America, made it as started to make it as a varietal, and so California picked up on it in the 1990s, started to throw plantings all over California, areas Paso Robles, Santa Cruz Mountain, AVA's Bonnie Dune Vineyard uses it with blends of Cabernet Franc, and some of the wineries are using it as a blend for varietals, their own varietals. Also, California producer blending it with Sangiovese and Syrah. Vineyards in Texas, Arizona, Oregon, and Virginia are importing the cuttings from California. And in 2002, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, TTB, approved it as the tannin as onto the list of grape varietals that could be made into a varietal wine. The acreage in California has increased at last count by over 200 acres. So that's a little bit of background on the tannin. And the reason I wanted to read you a little bit about the tannin is because wine blogger here, this is, and let me find the blog is the 2011 theme. It is the Wine Roads of Texas. It's labeled a journey through Texas wineries. And it is, let me put this out of the way here. It is Margaret Shugart is the author of this blog. So if you want to tune in, find the blog again, The Wine Roads of Texas, is this segment, Journey Through Texas Wineries. She's talking, the tannin is hot. She says, this is certainly my favorite new to Texas variety. Maybe because it's so suited to our climate. And she said even more so than probably the original home in France. But it's intriguingly flexible, transforming itself through various fermentation methods. It says it's a good way for Texas winemakers to make a deep, heavy red wine, which she is alluding to the fact that Texas is not good at that. We will see when we start talking to Texas wineries. Originally from southwestern France, it goes, the tannin can be, come out strong, overpowering, and just almost too firm, she's saying. She says, although it blends very well with other varieties, not unlike a Cabernet Franc, which is used a lot for blending. It says the tannin, the micro-oxygenation was invented as a technique to help round out wines and soften its tannic structure. She's giving full credit to the tannic grape for the micro-oxygenation process. In Uruguay, it is called Harrug, H-A-R-R-I-A-G-U-E. And Harrug, I don't know. And is now considered the national grape. The winemakers there employ different types of fermentation practices to soften the finish and also give less time in contact with the skins and pips, which lowers the tannic acid. But in Texas, this characteristic is celebrated and provides great possibility for flexibility. Applause to the sun and heat for naturally softening the tannins on the vine. Usually it's a drawback when it comes to growing calves and Merlots, or I'm sorry, calves and Zinfandels. This phenomenon enables Texas winemakers to play with tannins' more delicate qualities, its undertones of raspberry chocolate and subtle red floral notes. She says that the West Cave Cellars, Alan Fetty, a part owner and winemaker, is focusing on creating a clean, balanced, heavy red wine and had the foresight to plant tannin in the vineyard. They blend with 12% Cabernet and believe it's just perfect for the palate. It's marvelous complexity of cherries, red plum, with herbaceous qualities. She goes on to say it's a perfect state wine and they sell out of it quickly. So there's also other wineries that are putting it out in Texas. It is grow the cordons grow naturally upward and are a perfect candidate for the Roman pruning method. Juice a lot of them sets on the skin until fermentation is complete, then the wine is placed in barrels to age. All sorts of good stuff, all sorts of different wineries here from Texas that are using the tannin grape. So just want to introduce you to tannin and a little backdoor introduction to Texas. So as we all try to get a hold of some of these wineries when we start getting into Texas and see if they can't get on there and tell us a little bit about the tannin grape. I'm not real familiar with it. I have seen it. I've heard of it, but I don't believe I've ever had a varietal a bottle of tannin, just tannin. I've seen it as a blend, but never as a bottle. So, should be interesting. It should be fun. It should be something that we can look forward to when we start talking to Texas and what they have there. Why don't we look at other stuff? Oh, I know what I want to talk about now. Joy's Joy of Wine, and Joy, if you're listening, I'm going to plagiarize you again like I enjoy doing, but no pun intended on that. Joy's Joy of Wine, great blog. If you don't follow it, by all means, you really should. She does an excellent job. Not a hard read, and actually she was a guest on the show. You can jump back and pick her up on one of the archives if you haven't heard about her yet. She'll tell you all about the website or her blog, and she'll also tell you about her other blog. She does a cemetery blog, which was interesting. But if you haven't, and if you don't follow Joy's Joy of Wine, it is a good blog. One of my favorite, actually. That and a couple of others that I follow all the time, religiously. But enough of that. This latest one, she talks about, should cheap wines win medals? Before we get into that, and that's just a question I'm going to throw out to you there. Before we get into that, I want to go through an article here. This appeared in a Canadian newspaper, and I'm trying to find the National Post. So I guess it's a national paper. I don't know. It doesn't give any towns or anything. But Canada National Post. So the it, not being familiar with papers, it could be like our
like a freebie one, like TBT or something.
Yeah, it could be something like that, or it could be a national. What is our national paper here in this country that we see now? That doesn't publish on weekends, Monday through Friday. What is it? I've got a complete blank now. What is the newspaper that you can find all over the place? USA Today. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
USA Today. You know, it could be like that. This Canada, the National Post, could be like the USA Today in Canada. I don't know. I didn't look up any more on it. I just saw this article and didn't look up the background on the National Post. But the article states, vintage snobbery. Are wine critics fooling us into buying pricier wines? I'm going to go through and, you know, read and paraphrase and comment on this article, because there's a lot of interesting little things on this article. Start out with, let me read you this first couple of paragraphs. This is in Roald Dahl's 1951 short story Taste. Stockbroker Mike Schofield challenges his dinner guest, a wine snob named Richard Pratt, to a high-stakes bet. If Pratt can guess which wine is being served, Schofield will offer Pratt his beautiful young daughter's hand in marriage. If Pratt is stumped, he forfeits his two houses to Schofield. The host grows agitated as Pratt sniffs and ponders and eventually comes up with the correct vintage and name of the obscure vineyard. Then the maid arrives carrying Pratt's eyeglasses. He had left them in the study where the wine was being brought to serving temperature. Pratt had seen the label, in other words, he cheated. Dole's story pivots on a suspicion of a rather old vintage. The wine criticism gives off a heavy aroma of BS with hints of outright fraud. It's a suspicion that has been given credence by studies and gotcha stunts in recent years that have demonstrated the limits of a wine snob's art. The evidence could leave the average drinker imagining that judges and critics simply invent their own florid descriptions of wine and pull scores out of thin air. And, you know, and this is, that was read, this is me editorializing again. But, you know, you wonder about some of these descriptions. People say, I never smell that. I don't understand that. You know, we get, obviously in a winery, we get a lot of amateurs, if you will, and I hate using that word because, you know, it's untrained. I don't know what word would be proper to use there. But a lot of people aren't really, you know, trained in wine. And they're always saying, well, how did they come up with that smell, that smell, that smell? And just inventing a very neat description just so people would be impressed. It goes on. Robert Goldstein, a U.S.-based wine writer who is a trained sommelier and who has got under the skin of the wine establishment more than once said, there's almost nowhere where the BS goes deeper than in the wine world. And again, it's probably true, you know, if you really think about it. For example, in 2008, he had a large set of blind tastings to demonstrate that only people who have wine training prefer expensive wines to cheap wines. Mr. Goldstein has long argued that blind taste tests, ordinary wine drinkers like cheap wine as much as or even more than expensive wine. Meanwhile, he and other rebels in the wine world of wine criticism argue that magazines, websites, and competitions are rigged, consciously or not, to give pricier wines better reviews. I don't know if that's true or not. We had a wine judge on the program, and he was telling us what it takes to go through to become qualified as a wine judge, and to be a wine judge. And it's tough. It's a tough thing. Again, you can go back and listen to the archive program on that. It was, you know, some of the testing they had to do. I mean, some of the things they had to accomplish to become a judge. And, you know, you say, well, you know, that's a lot of work. But if you're having your wine judged, of course, you want it judged properly. You want it judged right. And most judging is blind tasting. It wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be fair to do this model is a 2004 Heights Cabernet Sauvignon that is very young and not ready to be drank, but you know you're going to taste it. And this bottle is a Barefoot Cabernet, which they bottled last week. You know you're not going to tell that to people. You don't. Obviously, is you're going to start getting yourself some sort of bias on that. And so you want to try to avoid that. So therefore, blind tastings are done. It says, though, on this article, it goes on and says, all this questioning may be especially relevant at a time when the Canadians are flocking to the wine regions by the car and busload. And they are also buying wines. Statistics show that the Canadian spirits and beer have flattened or lost sales for a generation, but their Canadians are drinking more wine. And obviously, this is a Canadian article, so hence the reference to Canadians. Canadians are drinking more wine than ever, approaching 15 liters per capita annually. This is increased consumption of 14.6% between 2007 and 2011. And it's expected to continue to grow at the same place, which is triple the world average, by the way. So it's and to go on for the next several years. And tastes are getting more expensive. Statistics show that the amount of red wine spent, amount of money spent on red wine increased by 181% between 2000 and 2011. While the overall volume sold was only 65%, which basically says that they're spending more money, but they're not, you know, buying more wine. So it shows that it's a more expensive wine. That said, are we wasting our money? It asks. Says the embarrassing moments in the industry have cause people to step back and take a look at it. Consider this before dropping $200 on that 95-point Bordeaux. In 2011, a psychologist at Hertfordshire University demonstrated via blind tastings with 578 students that most people simply cannot tell the difference between a cheap wine and an expensive one. The experts do little better. A 2001 University of Bordeaux experiment tricked 54 undergraduates in a university wine program into thinking that white wine was red simply by adding food coloring. I've heard this being done before to wine tasters, or to wine judges. I have mixed emotions about this. My mixed emotion is, why would you want to do that to them? You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's plain. And you know, when you're having a wine tasting, I don't see a reason to be doing that. except that you just want to say. And so, therefore, are you negating all their scores from that point on and everything they've done? So what do you do? Say, okay, you all can go home now because you just scored a red wine as a – or white wine as a red because we had a food coloring. I really do have a problem with playing games like that. Sure, 578 subjects doing a blind tasting. They probably can't tell the difference between expensive ones and ones. You set a wine down in front of a normal person and say, here, taste this. They're going to taste it, and they're going to go, oh, wow, this is great. You know, and they don't break it down. They don't look at it. But, okay, I continue. Or take the contentious issue of wine scores. This is something that, you know, I will comment on, which many consumers use to make quick decisions on what to buy. The 100-point system pioneered by celebrity wine writer Robert Parker was challenged when California winemaker Robert Hodgson talked the California State Fair Wine Competition into letting him test the judges in 2005. The fair presented the judges with each wine three times on different days. Their scores were wildly inconsistent, with an average plus or minus variance of 4 points. A judge might give a wine 91.1 day, which is a quite respectable score, actually. 95 the next, an outstanding score, and then a ho-hum 87 points the day after that. All right. We can put this in perspective very easily in the fact that what was preceded or what was the situations and stuff like that when you give them these same wines. Are you, you know, was it after meals? Was it, you know, I don't know. I have a problem with this also, and sure, it's going to make a difference on that. I teach a class. I've been doing it for years at the winery, and one of the things I teach in the class is the 100-point scoring system, and just a basic 100-point scoring system, breaking it down to five categories: the color, the aroma, bouquet, the taste, and the aftertaste, and you know, 1 to 10 points on each one, and then you go from there. Just a basic 100-point scoring system. Now, these are people in the class who aren't trained in wine. These are people in the class who aren't, by any means, aren't experts. They take the class because they want to learn, and we spend 3 hours just teaching them a bunch of stuff about wine so that they know not to say Merlot, but to say Merlot. And during the class, I brown bag everyone. After we've taught the 100-point scoring system, I brown bag everybody on a wine. I pour them all a little bit of it. I tell them no right or wrong answers. You know, just break it down and score it on each of the five categories. And I've been doing this for, well, we've been open over 11 years now, and I've been doing it for over 11 years, classes on an average of once a month. During that time, every one of these scores are usually within 5 or 6 of each other. And I'm not getting 95-point wines. I have to qualify that. I had a great wine, which was in the low 90s, which everyone scored in the low 90s, from Prump Vineyard out in Nevada. Their Zinfandel, their first growth Zinfandel from Prump Vineyard. If you ever get an opportunity to try that, I highly suggest it because everyone gave it a great score. But the point being, the scores are usually always within 5 points of each other. No matter what the wine is, no matter who the people are, it's usually within 5 points of everybody. Now, these are people who aren't really wine experts by any means. They know what they like. They know what they don't like. But they're not picking up this wine and they're tasting it and say, oh, I love this. I'm going to give it a 93. They're not picking up the wine and say, oh, I hate this. I'm going to give it a 1. They break it down. They're honest with it. And they do it and they give scores. Robert Parker and his gang, his people, have been doing this for years. They're doing it in blind tastings. They're doing it in the in areas that, you know, they know basically what the wine is, but it's not something that, you know, they know all about it. And because it's a blind tasting, the 100-point scoring system works. These judges, you know, when you start doing something like, here, try this wine now, and you just had yourself breakfast, or here, try this wine now, and you've had other stuff. We all know how things can influence wine and the taste. I have an issue with breaking this, you know, doing this in three different tastings in the same wine. I don't know. It's just something that rubs me a little bit wrong to try to prove these judges wrong. You know, okay, well, going on. I'm going to get off my soapbox about that here. Canadian critics, wine critics, acknowledge the shortcomings of wine competitions and the criticisms of. There's a lot of valid points, and there's a lot of things that, you know, can be done. But what alternative? All right, what are you going to do? Okay, if you're going to have wine competitions, and everybody loves wine competitions. They're all over the country, all over the world. Everybody knows about wine competitions. Everybody is aware of it. Everybody likes to have a medal or their ribbons or a gold or whatever. Everybody likes this. So you're going to say, okay, these judges don't know what the heck they're doing. Okay, so what's the alternative? I don't know. There is no alternative. The judges are trained as best they can. I mean, they're not perfect by any chance. They're people. So we got to realize that. Just because they're wine judges doesn't mean that, you know, they're infallible. Same thing as criminal judges or anybody else. They're not infallible. So, but, you know, and we're talking wine here, not life and death, for heaven's sakes. Toronto-based wine critic and master sommelier John Sesbo says his profession is under the fire because wine is an easy target for the anti-snob parade. But he also says wine criticism and competitions need to be stricter in their methodology. His inexperienced judges tend to come in and erode the field and cause problems. And he also says that the judges are expected to sample dozens of wines per flight and still deliver an honest answer and an honest opinion of it, which I can understand that. You know, maybe more judges with less tasting. Says Mr. Goldstein would like to see a wine competition adopt some of the rigorous and awesome judge vetting measures employed in beer competitions. I'm not familiar with beer competition judging, so I don't know anything about that. I don't know if it's obviously what he's saying. Beer competition judging is tougher than wine competition, which, hey, I don't know. If anybody out there listening and they do know, email me, send me a link to beer competition. Wine judges also admit that their imperfect noses can be the weakest link, which, hey, the nose can be. There's any number of things that can cause it. Experiments that show up the wine lover's art often play on the relationship between context, expectations, and perceptions. For example, changing the color of wine or telling a critic that it's expensive can set them up to taste it in a distorted way. When you expect something to be good, you're going to like it better. Again, wine critics are just people. They're susceptible to that. Wine experts agree that there are lessons to be drawn from these studies. Drinkers should try lots of different wines and not let themselves be told what to like. Well, I don't think people do. I honestly don't. I think people are smart enough out there. I tell people there's two types of wines in the world, the type you like and the type you don't like. If you like it, you're going to drink it. If you don't like it, don't drink it. It's fun to try to find the ones you like, though, so don't just stay with something all the time. Try other things. It's fun to try. Angela Aiello, who has a company called iYellow, says most people don't even want to enter into the wine world because they feel stupid. I think that's changing. You know, maybe so, but you know, I think that's changing a lot. Another lesson they're saying, many wine experts are quick to deny there's a strong link between price and quality. The $15 to $30 range might well be the sweet spot, where quality is relatively consistent while the value remains decent. Which I think so too. I think that's your best range in there for price for quality. But a bottle of wine, it is pointed out, can only be so good. You can only do so many things to make a wine premium, such as lowering the yield of the vines or employing premium oak for aging. Even then, wine, I'm quoting all this, even then, wine still doesn't cost very much to make. The only thing that causes prices to be above $30 or $40 is reputation and marketing. It isn't because the wine's better. People would argue me on that point, this guy says, but I challenge them to test the argument in the blind tasting. I do argue with him on that. Wine costs what it costs for a lot of different reasons, but it's not because wines are the same once you get to $30, $40 and everything else is, marketing reputation. Cost of grapes. You get grapes in Napa Valley. You buy and sell them by the ton. A ton of Cabernet Sauvignon in Napa Valley right now selling for something like $3,000 a ton, $4,000 a ton. Fresno Valley, same grapes, are less than $1,000 a ton. And Napa grapes are in good climates. They're growing with ideal conditions. Fresno is hot. It's going to give you a different end result. So, I disagree with him when he says it doesn't make any difference. You've got the money invested into these things. It's going to give you a better product at the end. Also, French oak barrels as opposed to Missouri oak or Minnesota oak. I mean, if these things are going to make a difference, and French oak costs a lot more. So, I don't know. If you disagree with me, I'm sure a lot of you do out there, then let me know. I don't mind being called on the carpet on this stuff. As for those fruity descriptions in wine reviews, you've all heard those, a ripe apple or a clementine or limestone and all that. Says the descriptors are not nonsense. Says chemical analysis shows that the same molecules that give the peach the smell of a peach, we find those in wine. Indeed, the fermentation and aging of wine can leave detectable amounts of certain flavor compounds in the wine that have the same molecular structure as other objects in the real world. For example, the molecule called esters that give fruits their distinctive flavors. Certain esters make us think of strawberries, others of banana, and so on, can actually be found in wine. So, when you pick up a bottle of wine and say, I smell green apple, it's not just something that you're making up. The esters are actually picking up the green apple out of the wine. So, when you start hearing these things and all that. Now, most of these are soft or subtle and all that. And a lot of it has to do, too, with are you familiar with a green apple? If you've never had a green apple in your entire life, you're not going to understand what you're smelling is green apple. And some of these descriptions are things that people just aren't familiar with. Diesel fuel. Most people compare diesel fuel to the exhaust of trucks. Well, diesel fuel has a slightly sweet, pungent smell to it, which is different than the exhaust. But some wines will pick up certain things that are familiar with that. So, if you're not familiar with it, if you're not familiar with what a boysenberry smells like, then you're not going to pick that up as a smell in that wine. If you're not familiar with what a ugly fruit smells like, then you're not going to pick it up in the wine. So, those things, legitimate there. So likewise, oak barrels are used to age some wines, and they do contain vanillin, which is vanilla. That's why I always tell people, if you pick up vanilla in a wine, that's usually oak you're detecting, because the wine itself is not going to have vanilla. Here's something else that's rather controversial, too, and this addresses it in the article. On the other hand, science has challenged the notion of minerality in wine. often cited as the influence of a particular soil leaving its mark on a wine's flavor. We've all heard of the minerality of it. In fact, I had somebody ask me at a tasting just a couple of weeks ago about minerality, and it's a debate. Who knows? Alex Maltman of the Institute of Geography and Earth Sciences at Eberswein University concluded in a 2009 paper that any soil nutrients that make it into the finished wine are in concentrations too low for humans to taste. The widely cited direct literal connotation between vineyard geology and wine taste seems scientifically impossible, he wrote. Whatever minerality in wine is, it is not the taste of vineyard minerals. Interesting study. It says, the wine critic's final defense in the wine criticism is not meant to be infallibility, infallibly objective. It argues that wine reviewing, like art criticism, is largely a matter of taste and opinion. If you find yourself a wine reviewer that matches your taste, then listen to him. If you find a movie reviewer that matches your taste, listen to him. If a movie reviewer says that the new Lone Ranger movie stinks and you watch it and you thought it stinks, then hey, maybe he's got the same taste as you. But if he says it stinks and you watch it and you say, wow, that was fantastic, maybe his reviews are complete opposite of yours, and the only reason you'd follow him is just that if he didn't recommend it, then you should see it. But same thing with wine reviewers. If you have yourself find a reviewer who is particularly close to your taste, then it's something that you should follow. Drinkers seek the advice because they tend to regard wine as something more serious than other drinks. That's why we have so many reviewers. That's why we have so many of these magazines, because they tend to look at wine more seriously than they do anything else. And we have a passion for wine, and we express that in a number of words and sighs and pleasures and judging and all sorts of stuff. If it were nothing that we would enjoy, well, like the article here ended up saying, we don't have orange juice critics, which, you know, we have wine critics. We have wine scores, all that. You're not doing that to orange juice. So, interesting article, interesting information there, which leads me back to the article of Joy's Joy of Wine. 2 weeks ago, wines from Charles Shaw won 3 gold medals at the Orange County Fair Wine Competition in Orange County, California. The winners were the 2011 Charles Shaw Cabernet Sauvignon, the 2012 Charles Shaw Merlot, and the 2012 Charles Shaw White Zinfandel. Okay, great. Sounds wonderful. Sounds exciting. These wines retail from $2.49 to $3.79 around the country and are sold at Trader Joe's, a specialty chain of grocery stores. Charles Shaw wines have been nicknamed Two Buck Chuck because when they first, if you're listening to us live, then we're going to go on archive here in about a minute and a half, so pop in on the archive.
Yeah, I thought it was a 90 minutes. I thought it was 90 minutes.
Oh, yeah. It's been, okay, you know, 60 for the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
For some reason here. Two Buck Chuck, because when they were first released, they sold for $1.99 a bottle. Prices have increased, but the moniker remains. The Charles Shaw line of wines is produced by Bronco Wine Company, which is owned by the Franzia family. And, oh, wait, Franzia? That's Franzia Boxwine, who is in fourth place in number of sales in this country. Owned by the Franzia family, who has been in the wine business for over 100 years. Two Buck Chuck won gold medals. Now, these are blind tastings, okay. Of these awards, these awards are nothing new. The 2007 Charles Chardonnay won the same competition, scoring double gold and best Chardonnay from California and best of class. And 2004 Charles, 2002 Shiraz received a double gold, which means that all the judges at the table gave the wine a gold medal. Pretty impressive for a $1.99 bottle. And as she says, fairly sobering for the wineries releasing a Syrah of similar character. That price point was 10 times that or more. So $20, $30. These medals made the news in the wine world, and there are some who dislike awarding medals to a cheap wine brand. Why the sour grapes? Oh, nice pun. A variety of reasons. There are some who believe that a wine that sells for under $10, or is it under $20, can't possibly be as good as one with a higher price point. Which, this isn't on, which brings me to the question. Is a $100 bottle of wine really worth 10 times more? Is the wine really 10 times better than a $10 bottle of wine? It's hard to imagine it would be. No, I don't think so. Interesting concept, but as someone very familiar with wine and wineries, the final selling point for most consumers is the bottom line, and that translates into what the market will bear, which is really all it ever is. Most wine drinkers are looking for an everyday glass of wine with dinner. 2008 study showed that most people couldn't tell the difference between a cheap wine and an expensive one. That's the same study that I just quoted on the other article. Maybe, but that also depends on your definition of cheap and expensive, especially how extensive your wine tasting is. And the wine medal critics were concerned about two Buck Chuck winning awards as an under $3 wine because of the damage that price point could do to small wineries trying to survive in the retail market, which I can understand that. I mean, if two Buck Chuck is winning awards, or three Buck Chuck now is winning awards, then my wines are selling between $10 and $15. What's it going to do to me? I mean, you know, and they're winning gold medals. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a interesting discussion we can get into there. Orange County Fair competition is the largest wine competition held for the California-only wines. And it makes it rather prestigious to win awards there. The wines were judged for appearance, aroma, balance, varietal character, and a finish in a blind tasting. So there was no labels and no influence on that. It was a blind tasting. If the two Buck Chuck won three gold medals, maybe it's because the wines were judged for what they were at the time of the judging, which means they were good. And awards don't mean what they're going to be like in, you know, after aging for a year or cellar length or anything else. Right then, they were good. So, you know, go out and buy three or four cases of the three Buck Chuck now and have it every night. Serve it with, you know, your meals and your hot dogs and whatever. Basically, after all this is said and done, the whole article and everything I've been reading and everything I've been talking about, it all still boils down to the two types of wines, if you like it or if you don't like it. And if a wine is scored 97, and you happen to buy it, and you don't like it, then it can make no difference what the score was. You just don't like it. And that's all there's to it. People come in, they like reds, they like whites, they like sweet, they like dry. And you're not going to give them a glass of dry wine if they like sweet, and then they're not going to like it. I mean, they might, over a period of time, start enjoying it and finding qualities about it, but it's not going to happen overnight that people aren't. And when you start looking at scores, people look at scores, but they also look at price. One of the things I say in my class, I tell people, I said, I don't know you. I've just met you. But the last 10 bottles of wine you bought cost between $7 and $15. And everyone nods their head because that's what people buy. And the wines are okay, and they're enjoyable. They're not great, they're not phenomenal, but they're decent wines. And if people like those, and that's the price point that people are buying them at, wineries are making them at that price point, and that's what they're selling at that price point. You talk to the wineries around the country, or the ones we've talked to around the country, most of the wines range between $7 and $15. And it's funny because whenever we've talked to wineries that were higher in price, were in the lower 20s and stuff like that, Mike and I, after we, you know, would say, make comments about, oh, that's a little bit expensive, because we're used to the 7 to 15. And so if you can give awards to those, more power to them. It's great. It's wonderful. But I don't know all the answers. That's just, you know, something I'm going to talk about tonight. I saw these. I saw two Buck Chuck winning awards, and it shocked me. And I'm going to check into some other stuff here and talk about that. So we're done for tonight.
Okay. Yeah, I had another disconnect, unfortunately, but I did get right back in. Oh, it does show that on the top. Caller mic has dropped. Okay, but I'm back, so it's still on there. Yeah, very interesting stuff. I was writing things down. In Texas, I have been to I know of one Texas winery that I've been to. It's a looks like an old it's a really very big building, but it looks like an old style brick style building, and I'll see if I can, you know, pull that back up. And
yeah, you can find there. It. Email me, and I'll get a hold of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, see if I can.
So probably next week we'll start with Texas, I guess?
Not next week. I'm going to try to get a hold of Florida Grape Growers Association president. I never thought about contacting him. My engineer here said, why don't you contact him? He might be a good guest. And I thought, yeah, you're right. That, you know, might be an interesting guest. So I'm trying to get him on. I'm going to email Jason here, the lawyer we talked to, see if I can't get him booked in sometime here and tell us what's going on in the legal part of the wine world.
Yeah. Wasn't he, was he the one in Pennsylvania or someplace?
Yes.
I forgot where it was out of. Oh, Pennsylvania, was it? Okay. I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Hershey. Okay.
Lancaster.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Okay. That's right.
Not Lancaster. Lancaster.
Lancaster.
Lancaster.
It's like one, it's one thing. Yeah, no pause.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we have.
If I can't get him on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll pull the date for next week because I don't have that.
Yeah, one or the other. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to get Mr. Polish who is the president of Florida Grape Growers Association, or maybe Jason from the lawyer. So,
yeah, very good. And I'm surprised the real estate person didn't come through. That was a surprise. I thought for sure. Yeah,
I thought he would. I'm surprised that he didn't. I thought as a realtor you would do that. I mean, is 5 minutes out of your time? You know, so. Mm-hmm. But who knows?
Yep.
Maybe it's because we don't have an opening and closing for the segment.
I will have to work on that. Something quick. What bothers me about this medium is it's in mono. So when I'm creating these in the audio software, it's in stereo and things are like going back and forth. And it's like, it just sounds great. And then I put it on here and it's like, what? It didn't sound like that on the, so it converts it to like a telephone quality, you know, thing. It doesn't sound.
Goes from Indigata to Vita with headphones on to hearing it on the car radio.
With one speaker. You know.
With one speaker.
Yeah. Woohoo. Well, that was good. But yeah, I'll be able to work on those after. After tomorrow, so
something just simple and because I am going to find a California real estate agent that handles wine. I am going to get one. It got me excited about this. I'm disappointed that one didn't respond, but it got me excited about this. I think that'll be fun to get one on. So,
there's a lot of properties out there for sale. That's for sure.
There is
wine. Yeah, every week coming up with something, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I know we're in overtime, so hopefully people are tuned in to the archives and still listening because I have information about this Saturday's Wine Fest at Florida State's Winery. Stand by. I'll be back in 1 minute and 15 seconds, roughly.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@floon.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Mike left us again. So, Florida State's Winery, we've got a social festival. We are going to be there, hopefully, without any rain issues. Chantel, the tropical storm, tropical depression, tropical wave, has now just a rain event, so we might get a little bit of rain. Hopefully not. We'll see. But we're still open. We're still coming. We're still doing tastings. We're still going to have people there. So come out if you're in the area. Stop by. Come and see us. You can get in touch with us at www.floridaestateswines.com. That is with an S, floridaestateswines.com. And Mike dropped. I'm looking at seeing what's going on here with Mike. He disappeared. So you can get in touch with us that way. You can also call us. Area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. We are there for... during business hours, 11 till 6, so get in touch with us during business hours. Otherwise, you're going to get the machine. Also, you can email us at corp, C-O-R-P, at floon, F-L-E-W-N.com. And that really makes sense. Corp as in corporation, floon as in Florida Estates Wine. And, you know, if you think about it, it's not just some silly made-up name. Or you can get in touch with me here at Blog Talk Radio. You can go to All About Wine, or allaboutwinebtr@gmail.com. allaboutwine101. Gee, I'm glad my engineer is back here correcting me. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Or you can tune into our website, which is www.allaboutwinebtr.com. and connect us there. So there's lots of ways to get in touch with us. You can, if you have any questions about the festivals or anything. And we also have a class coming up on Sunday, so you can get in touch with us then too about the class. We cover, it's Wine 101. We cover a whole bunch of subjects, $25 in advance, $30 at the door. There's a bunch of information. We talk about a bunch of things, we pass on, all that stuff. We taste wines, we have snacks. All sorts of things to do, and really fun. 3 hours of teaching a puff about wine, and so you know, like I said earlier, why to hold the pinky out and why to say Merlot instead of Merlot. So fun class, enjoyed teaching it, and students always have a good time in it. You can get in touch with it, and if you can't make it this Sunday, we do classes just about every month, very few exceptions. So contact us about that. And Mike is writing to me. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why. Mike has been dropped 3 times tonight during the program. Oh, he was going to call me on the host calling number, but it might kick me off, so I don't want that to happen. So, one other thing I'm going to tell about last night, channel surfing, and came across Sci-Fi Channel. I love the Sci-Fi Channel. I watch it a lot. But they had Ghost Hunters on last night. I don't know if you're familiar with Sci-Fi Ghost Hunters. And they were in Liberty, Missouri at the Belvoir Winery. We talked to them. We talked to Belvoir Winery. I don't know how long ago. I don't have the dates in front of me here. But it was interesting. It was interesting. They talked to the owner of the place. They showed a lot of the buildings around the winery and all that. All this stuff that we talked to him about on the program, they showed it and all that. So it was interesting, very interesting to sit there and look at it and say, I was there, I know that. You know, and we talked to him and, you know, and everything. So it was just fun, a fun thing to be able to watch him and do all that stuff. And that's it. If you have any comments to us, if you have anything, get in touch with us again, allaboutwinebtr.com. You can always contact us there or at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. I will definitely respond to you, even if you criticize me. If you find fault with something, I'll get on there and we'll talk. So, and tune in next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks everyone for listening. Numbers are good as always. That the show on fracking got some big numbers. It was an interesting show. Still don't have answers for you on fracking. Nobody seems to. So get in touch with us. If you have any questions about anything, if you have any comments, if you have anyone you can think of being on the show, if you want to be on the show, any of that stuff, we'll look forward to hearing from you. Y'all have yourself a very pleasant, wonderful week. And we'll see you here next week. Oops, wait a minute. Let me find the closing. I was just getting ready to hit the closing, and that's not it. He disappeared. There's the intro. Mike usually hits these buttons, and I'm having a problem finding them now. Here we go. Ending. So, thanks for tuning in. We will see you guys and talk to you next week. Now, everyone dance.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.